are here today with Matthew Utter from High Green Brewing talking about one of our favorite topics, beer.
Beer.
Beer. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
Oh, wonderful. How are you all?
We are good because we were fresh off the news about High Green Brewing expanding. And so more High Green is always better. So it was like, this is the perfect week to have you on.
It is. It is. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
So let's just
go ahead, Sherry. No, go ahead.
When I asked you your title, I thought you were going to be like owner, CEO. I know there's three founders, but you know, you put brewer in your title. And so can you kind of tell me, like, you know, the origin story of High Green Beer?
Sure. My personal background, there are three of us. It's Josh, Brian, and I, but my personal background goes back to, I guess, the late 90s. I took a trip to Europe, specifically Munich, Germany, through an exchange program prior to leaving high school, and studied over there for a little while. Went through an intensive course to become fluent in German, received that fluency degree in the language as a prerequisite to starting my electromechanical engineering degree. That degree quickly changed, well, quickly within the first year of me studying for that. Met a bunch of people in multiple different industries, obviously Munich being the mecca of, in my opinion, the mecca of brewing. As well as engineering, I ran into a couple brewers and people just in the brewing industry. And, you know, brewing industry, people think of just people, you know, stirring mash in big tanks, where it's, you know, there's a lot more to the science side of it and the technology side of it, development, you know, old world styles and historical ways to brew beer versus the new age American way to brew beer. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I was persuaded to change my degree from the direction of electromechanical engineering to brewery technology and beverage production.
Where
that
do you go?
Sounds a lot more fun.
Yeah.
If I had to pick between the two,
I considered internships with BMW, which was a lot of fun. However, I did get to shadow somebody at Polliner for about 3 or 4 weeks over there, which did persuade me to switch over to the brewing industry. So I was over there for a little over 10 years in total before I moved back home.
And did you always have the plan that you were going to come back home and do this?
No, I didn't. I do like the industry. When I came home, I worked at Rock Bottom for a good while, played in their restaurant industry for a little bit, and then was called on by the founder of Christian Moorline to become a brewer, and then ostensibly the head brewer there. That was about 4 years of my career working in OTR at Christian Moorline. Leaving that position at some point when an opportunity arose for me to be one of the leads in a large scale festival company, specifically beer festivals around the country. So I ventured into that career path for a while, which led me to meet an incredible amount of people from Philly to Cleveland, all the way down to Florida and everywhere in between, just meeting different brewery owners and different styles of beers, different styles of breweries, the whole nine yards. I mean, I did it a good part of 6 years and, you know, traveled a lot and met, you know, countless people that I'm still in touch with, which allowed me to understand the buying portion of the beer industry. Obviously marketing as well, festivals, of course, you know, planning large scale events. So it really diversified my understanding of the restaurant industry prior to that brewing industry originally, and then, you know, buying, selling, you know, marketing and the rest, if I could say so, the rest of the important parts of this industry, minus finance, which I still don't touch. That's that's somebody else's room.
There's people for that. There's there. Rock Bottom is such a throwback to me. So I moved here in 2002, and that's the very first place someone took me. There was not a lot after the riots and everything. There wasn't a lot of choices downtown. So that's the first place that I went. I have not thought about that in a long time. But just to think about where we are now in Cincinnati's, you know, our beer culture, our beer, all of our companies and breweries, it's amazing to think from that one, really, to what we have now. Wow. And people like you made that.
Yeah, I'm blessed to be part of a great group of beer industry founders of the city. You know, there's a large handful of the OGs, if you will, and now there's, you know, 60 plus breweries in town, all of which have their own little niches and histories and, you know, styles of beer and do they have food or not, and, you know, just different parts of town, and you know, discovering an oasis of Cincinnati to plant a new brewery, to give the people that don't have the opportunity to walk down the street and go to their neighborhood brewery is fun to see, you know, countless, right? Streetside, Brink, Mantry, and Oakley now, you know, obviously Rangay's taking care of downtown for a while, RIP Rock Bottom, but like all these different little, you know, Mason having, you know, 16 lots in Sonder and 50 West coming, and, you know, it's just fun to have easy drives for people to get good liquid.
So I was going to ask about, you know, it's kind of a two-part question. You were working for other people, you worked for Rock Bottom, you kind of got into a different facet of the business with events. And at some point you decided, okay, I'm done working for people, I'm going to work for myself. And when we think of breweries, we think of OTR, we think of, you know, Hyde Park, Oakley, we think of Main Strauss, but you went into Deer Park, which if I was to, you know, run a list of neighborhoods to put a brewery on, I wouldn't have come up with Deer Park. So tell me a little bit about how that unfolded.
So I'm going to slight correction. It's Silverton. No, okay. We share a fire department. We can share a brewery. So,
okay. you know what? I've been there and I just thought I was still in Deer Park. I don't remember crossing the line into Silverton.
Yeah. So, this used to be Silverton Memorial Municipal Building, Town Hall. Did that screw everything up?
No, nope. Not at all.
Oh, my phone rang. It went onto my computer. Sorry. Josh, Brian, and I sat down. I left Moreline. Josh left Moreline. Brian is in the restaurant industry. He runs our front of house. Those are my two other partners. Josh worked a short stint with me at Moreline. He is more in the development, marketing, consumer relation, understanding of what people want when they think of a product, not just beer. So he pulled me and said, hey, we can do this. And I said, okay. And he said, do you have anybody that can run kitchens, front of house, restaurant stuff? And I said, sure. So I brought Brian into it, and we were looking around. We had multiple different sites. We talked to developers, we talked to real estate agents, and we were looking for an oasis, right? A part of the Cincinnati area that didn't have the opportunity to walk to a brewery or a short drive. For the longest time, I drove to Rangeist, I drove to Mattry, I drove to, you know, those places like that, even Moreline Lager House, right, to get beer. And now, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. I don't have to drive downtown anymore. I can walk to Nine Giant, good friends of ours. And, you know, we've been able to give the city of Silverton, the village of Silverton, a place where people can walk up with their dogs, with their strollers, with, you know, themselves, whatever, to have a pint and have a good meal. So Silverton reached out to us, actually, and I guess we had a mutual friend, if I remember correctly. Silverton reached out to us and said, hey, we want to have a cornerstone. We want to have a catalyst in our village. Are you interested? And we started talking with them, and they wrote us a MOD. We signed an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, and we opened up this brewery here in town. But you're right. You know, I mean, picking Silverton, I didn't choose Silverton. I'd lie if I said I chose Silverton. Silverton chose us. We did studies on it. We did traffic patterns. We looked at the neighborhood itself and the surrounding neighborhoods, did a 3-mile study, and realized that there's a good housing stock and a great group of people in this area that needed a that need a place to go, you know. And I live in Pleasant Ridge, so does Josh. Brian doesn't live far either, and that's also pretty convenient. You know, one of our focuses is sustainability, and part of sustainability is keeping our footprint in general, not just carbon footprint, but people footprint. You know, most of our employees live in the Silverton, Deer Park, Pleasant Ridge, Kenwood area. And that's huge. You know, we can create jobs. We can create an opportunity for people to come here and enjoy themselves. And that's why Silverton worked. Silverton as a village, as a municipality, has helped us tremendously with zoning and funding and sourcing and, you know, just anything and everything we needed in order to succeed.
That's a great story. Quick follow-up. Did when you mentioned briefly the sustainability component of High Grain, and until I started boning up for this interview, I wasn't even familiar with the term carbon neutral beer. Is that unique among Cincinnati microbreweries?
To my knowledge, you know, when we say we're producing carbon neutral beers, which we, to be honest, I haven't done in a while, but I wanted to start a carbon neutral series of beers where we source the ingredients as local as possible. The ones that aren't sourced as local as we can because they're just not available, we offset that carbon footprint with carbon credits. And it's something that you can purchase. There's a company that we use called Cool Effect. And they use that money to offset our carbon footprint by planting trees or doing things in nature to create more oxygen or anything that we can use to offset the carbon footprint that we created to get the ingredients here. As I'm saying that, I realize that I'm kind of incorrect. We have switched, the majority of our malt now comes from a company called Origin Malt. They are based out of the Columbus area. They are focusing heavily on sourcing all grain that they use to malt and then deliver back to Ohio breweries from Ohio. So they're working hard to get their own malting facility in South Columbus. They are working with farmers in this region to plant more barley, plant more wheat, so that we can utilize that for our Ohio breweries so that we can all reduce our carbon footprint. So we are sourcing some of our things locally. Hops are a little bit more difficult due to the climate in the area. It's really difficult to get the abundance of hops that we use from this area. However, we do use some hops from the Cincinnati area. One in particular is Hopped Farms. They're on the border of like Milford, Indian Hill, Loveland area. Sean Carson's the farmer. He grows hops, and once a year we go and we pick them the same day we use them. It's our fresh hop beer, and it's almost like Christmas to us. So there are ways that we're trying to utilize local ingredients in the beer, but also in our food. Our chef also tries to get as local of ingredients as possible. Again, not always feasible, but we do our best to try to get as close to carbon neutrality as possible with ingredients, in addition to having an electric sales fleet, you know, Teslas and electric vans, you know, solar panels on our roof, geothermal energy for the HVAC system here, things like that. So we've strived, you know, to the best of our abilities financially as well as, you know, physically able to make ourselves as sustainable as possible in regarding, you know, the environment.
So when you first opened and we were writing about you everything in 2019, we didn't talk about all of the beers that would be coming. I feel like they were a twinkle in your eye then of the idea that you would have some beers in Kroger. And I just feel like you've grown beyond your wildest dreams in such a short amount of time compared to what you were saying in 2019.
Sure. Absolutely. 100% correct. We opened a brew pub, and a brew pub is meant, in my opinion, in our opinion, the founders, to, like I said before, give the local community a place to go with their families and friends and whatnot to hang out, have fun, relax, and have a libation, right? And that's what was our original goal. There was you know, some sort of virus that took over that changed our plan. And with that, we were shut down, as everybody was. We had a cellar full of beer in the tanks. We had a cooler full of kegs full of beer that we couldn't sell to restaurants because they weren't open, and we couldn't sell here because we weren't open. So we, you know, the new, it should have been like the number one word in Webster Dictionary is probably pivot in 2020, and we pivoted like everybody else did and figured it out. So we started canning beer. We did the best we could to keep everybody active, I guess the best word to use, and did what other people did, you know, similarly to keep our product fresh and moving and stay compliant with what we needed to do for coronavirus. That launched us into off-premise sales, retail sales, Kroger sales, things like that. My goal was not originally to hit distribution as hard as we have. It has succeeded. Currently, we are in a 35 to 40 Kroger. I think we have upwards of 200 off-premise retailers and 100-150 on-premise bars, restaurants that rotate our stuff through. And we are now popping at the seams here production-wise and opening up a second property.
And part of that's for your production, right? Because you have grown that large?
The majority of the reason why we're moving there is production. I was never a fan of opening just a production facility just because of understanding margins in gear and understanding margins in general. As from a business sense, we need butts in seats. We need to promote who we are, what we think is important within sustainability, but also our service staff is second to none. I mean, we retain them. They like working here. They come here on their off days. They enjoy the beer we make, the food we make, and they like to tell the people that come in here to enjoy that as well, how good it is and what their preference is. That's important. That keeps lights on, you know? So looking for a second property, we were looking again for I think they call them first neighborhoods, which are neighborhoods adjacent to the city of Cincinnati that really lacked the opportunity for people to grab a pint without having to drive, you know, a little bit farther than maybe they want to for a quick evening bite or after a football game or what have you, right? So actually, it's similarly to Silverton, Springfield Township approached us. And they offered us an opportunity to open a brewery there in an old bowling alley.
Brentwood Bowl, for those people who grew up in the Finneytown area, the man, many a fun time was had there in the 80s by, you know, teenage people who are now in their
teenage
50s.
Maybe
we buzzed down Linton Road. You know, I grew up in Forest Park, and it wasn't too long a drive to go down Linton Road and go bowling at the Brentwood Bowl. Plus, right down from there is the Greek Church, and so if we had like after youth group and stuff, we would go to the Brentwood Bowl and do bowling as well. So. Familiar with that. Before we talk about the new facility, and this is the part where Sherry groans, because this is when I come up with like 10 different story ideas. But when you were going through the list of people that you work with, especially for sourcing, it's fascinating that, you know, you can get the malt here. I can't believe that Ohio can produce hops and you can source that. Off the top of your head, you know, the economic impact of one brew pub or one local brewery, how many different businesses, other types of sourcing that do you actually work with? Like the business that other businesses that have to support a brew pub, about how many different types of businesses are you engaged with to make your product?
Just the beer?
Well, just the total, but starting with the beer, yeah.
Yeah, beer vendors in general, I would say it's easily two dozen different vendors.
And how many of those are local? And have others been popping up since the brewery scene here has been? Like, do you have more choices for local vendors now that there's a robust brewing scene here and it has maybe sparked other businesses?
Yeah, I would say yes. The majority of our bulk ingredients are not as local as I would like them to be because they're not available. But when it comes to adjuncts, one-off beers, we do work with local farms and nurseries and places that can grow specialty items for us, or they have bees that create the honey that we use in a specific beer, or we play with the Cincinnati Nature Center to get spruce tips every May, April, May. So those style of vendors are definitely popping up. We've had countless meetings with the zoo trying to figure out what we can do with them at Boyer Farm in planting things that we can, that are indigenous, that we can, you know, integrate into our product. So those type of vendors are more local than yeast. I mean, yeast we buy from yeast labs. The one that we currently use the most of is out of Chicago. You know, there's no local Cincinnati yeast lab that I could pull from, nor is yeast an indigenous thing per se. Hops were getting better and better. Again, not the best climate here, but hops, grain, yeast, water are the main four ingredients. For the beer. Now we also use chemicals, we use kegs, we use, you know, there's many other things that we need to make sure that the beer is produced clean and stored appropriately. And you know, there are local people that represent companies that may or may not be headquartered in Cincinnati. So I think more of our locally sourced items would be kitchen related than beer related, unfortunately, right now. But as you said, ever changing and ever growing for opportunities to buy as local as possible. We use a local printing company. That's one of our vendors. You know, it's Queen City Printing. He's in Norwood, and he is, the service that they provide is amazing. Their quality of product is good and their service is awesome. So it's putting money back in our community, whether or not that, you know, is what you're considering as a locally sourced item. They're still, you know, a company based in Cincinnati, that people live in Cincinnati that pay taxes here. So that's also important to us. And it also reduces the carbon footprint of the travel that the product needs to make to get from there to here, which is also part of our goal here at High Green.
Now that's phenomenal to think about, you know, the economic impact of one brewing operation and then multiply that across the landscape of greater Cincinnati. And it, you know, it's not a small game anymore as far as economic impact. And you were one of the you and your partners were part of that you know, that economic engine for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. Our chef focuses on it as well to try to keep things as local as possible, and also keep it in the range of price that people want to pay when they do go out to eat. You know, you get too locally sourced and too farm to table, and it becomes a little bit less affordable. And then that's also not sustainable for us to stay afloat and continue creating the impact that we are.
I do think it's interesting to mention that you actually do have a chef. We're not talking about frozen tater tots and pretzels, right?
What's wrong with frozen tater tots?
Nothing, okay. My bad. But I know, I remember Jill, I vividly remember her talking about like a surf and turf, like venison and like, was it lobster? Like you're doing like these really like high caliber meal pairings, it sounds like.
We are. He throws things our direction from time to time to keep people on their seats. People want new. It's a fine line both in the brewing world here as well as in food and in the kitchen of keeping things here that people know and love and come back for, but also rotating that top 20%, if you will, into new items that also keep people coming back to see what's new. People like new, but there's also the people that want, they're a creature of habit and they want the same thing every time. But yes, he is a chef. He does does make everything from scratch in-house. We source as local as possible. Also, you know, vegetarian, vegan options aplenty. Also rotate through his kitchen with that. He's known for a couple things on our menu now, which is exciting when we bring things back and people are excited and they repost it on social or whatnot. You know, Lent, he's bringing back his fish and chips, whatever he puts in his batter. I mean, you know, whitefish is whitefish, cod's cod, but it's the batter that makes a difference. And he, you know, tends to focus hard on the things that he can have an impact on the flavor for the menu. He just revamped our tartar sauce, you know, tiny little thing like tartar sauce, but it tastes fantastic. And I think it's what people talk about. So yes, he is good at what he does, and his culture in the kitchen, was also created, carefully, and we retain employees pretty easily that way.
Did we name the chef?
Christian Ireland.
Oh, say that last name again.
Ireland.
Christian Ireland. Okay, because we can't just talk about the amazing food. Also, I saw a picture of the fish and chips fly by in my Instagram feed last night. I don't know who posted it, but oh, bro, we got to go.
We totally need to go.
On a Friday, yeah.
Right, and I can offer my formal apology to Silverton for messing up the location, since they were such a key part of that location. But let's talk about the new location before we have to let you go. What can people expect when they walk into the former Brentwood Bowl?
They can expect an area probably 5 to 7 times larger than the current area here in Silverton. A patio experience like none other in any other brewery that I've seen in Cincinnati. And the reason is because it's an open patio with a roof. It's almost a three-season room, like some of us like to call it. It's something that, from a service standpoint, it gives the ability for our front of house folks a way to serve people in all weather conditions except for bitter cold. You know, we're gonna have a roof over it when it's raining. You'll be in the summer, you'll be able to sit out there and still enjoy the outside area without getting rained on. When it's, you know, 98 degrees and the sun's shining from the west, the patio faces west, you're not gonna get blasted by the sun as much as you do in other patios. So it'll give people an opportunity to be outside but still be comfortable. So that's something that's I think is exciting and kind of unique. The tap room itself will be huge, big glass windows to be able to see the brewery equipment, the production facility, and then also room for expansion in the building. We'll have private event spaces where we can close it off for you know, weddings or rehearsals or you name it. That can also bleed out into the patio. There's going to be entrances to be able to configure the tap room, dining room, patio experience to the needs of the event. Kitchen will be obviously significantly larger to be able to suffice for the amount of people that will be there. We're not quite sure on the exact menu. It will still be sustainably focused and scratch, as Christian does here. That's one of his goals, is to keep the model, the motto of High Grain and the model of what we do the same. However, the intricacy of the menu here might not be able to translate there due to the volume that we'll be going through. However, the quality will still be there.
So the bowling alley part is already gone. Is that right?
It is. When they went under, they were all the lanes were removed and sold.
All right. Well, someone's enjoying them somewhere, but you are preserving the mural, right, on the outside of the building?
The mural was going to stay regardless, but it's also Chris Gilbert and Kathleen Kennedy, the two that are our biggest partners from Springfield Township, told us that's one of the requirements. We have to keep it, which we would have never taken it down anyway. It looks fantastic. People recognize it. People relate to it. We are going to somehow preserve the Brentwood Bowl sign out front. Whether it is stay out front or it comes inside or the side of the building or who knows where. But we're definitely preserving that. Some of the paintings inside on the walls, there's bowling balls and whatnot. People will realize that it is still Brentwood Bowl. However, the Ambiance will now obviously be brewery and, you know, locally sourced food centric. Huge bar, indoor, outdoor bar as well.
So we're coming up on time. We should let you go, but I have a question to ask, and you probably won't like the question because it's kind of like asking a parent what their favorite child is. But do you have a favorite high grain brew?
Yeah, for sure. It's Monarch. Okay. It's a difficult question. However, if I've answered the question before and I've thought about it myself, Monarch's a great beer. It's a great beer. I like it. So selfishly, I think it's one of my favorite styles of beer. It's also an IPA that has proven to allow non-IPA drinkers to enjoy IPAs.
Oh, well, I have the ultimate test because my wife loves beer, but she is not an IPA fan. And sometimes I try to trick her and say, try this. And she's like, is it IPA? No. And then she can just smell it and go, it's an IPA. So I'm going to see if this will be the one. This will be the one that converts her.
There are still people that don't like it, right? The lager lovers, or dark beer lovers, or things like that. But there have been many, many, many IPA haters that will drink Monarch and love it. So that's
my favorite. Is it the beer that puts you on the map?
I think so. I really think so. Our Pilsner is more award-winning. I love our Pilsner. It does very, very well. But for me, Desert Island beer, I would take Monarch.
All right.
Would you pair up, because we are really going and we're having that fish and chips. Which beer would you pair with the fish and chips?
Fish and chips, seasonally, our Weizenbach. So we do, for Bockfest, we do a wheat beer Bock, just to throw something a little bit different out for the folks that do go to Bockfest and partake in Bock beers during the season. I think the Weizenbach would go very well with it. For most, my personal would be the Lucent Pilsner. Easy pairing.
All right, it is.
I'm sold.
Next weekend is Bockfest. Big weekend here in Cincinnati.
For sure.
All right. We cannot thank you enough for joining us today. I learned a lot. I love that part of the podcast.
It was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun when I received the email and text thread through Jill and all of you guys and decided that I was going to be the one to be on it. I was really excited about it. It's fun to tell our story.
Well, you guys have a great story. And I think what a perfect guest as we head into Bockfest, head into spring. And you guys have a lot going on. When is your target date to be open in the new location?
I would optimistically love to see it open late fall. I would realistically love to be able to take reservations for holiday parties next winter.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm marking all of that down, Brol, just so you know. Okay.
Well, everybody knows how construction projects go. So we're gonna share in your optimism, but wish you the best of luck.
Thanks so much. Let me know when you're here. I'd love to meet you all.
Have a good day.
All right.
You too.
Thank you.